out in the clearing. The albino teen left his .357 Magnum Colt Python in its holster. Instead, he filled his hands with the leaf-bladed throwing knives he'd made himself and kept secreted on his body and in his clothing. Seated atop an outcrop thrusting from the uneven ground, less than 10 feet from the three men he followed, Jack saw Liberty make his move against Ryan. The Winchester came up. Doc scattered to the left, just as they'd planned, making his way toward the huge Lamar.
Keep the old man alive, you stupid bastards!
Phylox and his two partners raised their rifles to their shoulders, taking aim. Both hands flashing, Jack threw the leaf-bladed knives. Their hands reached over their shoulders, trying to grasp the knives buried deep in their backs, as Jack swiftly made his way across the forest floor. One of the men turned to see him in midair, pulling another blade from his vest. Jack spun and ducked into cover behind a thick bole of an oak as the Coldheart dropped to his knees, pointing his gun at the ground. His hand dropping to the butt of the .357, Jack ripped the big weapon free of leather. Following his momentum around the tree bolt, he brought up the Colt in a two-handed grip, aiming at Phylox's head. The third man tried in vain to find cover. Jack pursued relentlessly, bringing up the .357 again. The front sight fell over the back of his target's skull. Jack picked up Phylox's rifle. He recognized the weapon as he brought it to his shoulder. A Marlin bolt-action 30-30 with a 5-round clip. Squinting through the telescopic sights, he tracked across the clearing where Doc and Brian scrambled for their lives. The gang poured a constant barrage of fire, fighting against their struggling mounts. Jack slipped his finger inside the rifle's trigger guard, knowing the lives of his friends existed only one heartbeat to the next, with no guarantees. Ryan had dived to the right of the clearing, knowing he'd pull most of the gang's guns in his direction.
Get the bastard now!
Ryan ducked into position behind a 3-foot-high shelf of rock, thrusting the Stier's barrel through the underbrush.
Phylox!
Liberty twisted his head to the right as he reached under the wag's seat and came away with an ammo belt. Ryan put the Stier's crosshairs over Liberty's face, leading the man slightly as the gang leader moved across the wag. As Ryan squeezed the trigger, however, a horse and rider reared in the way. A torrent of blood fell from the horse's jugular as its rider fought to stay in the saddle.
Fire blast!
Both horse and rider collapsed in death. Ryan looked for Liberty again, but there was too much confusion in the clearing.
You'll do.
He took cover behind the shelf and spotted another target so close, he didn't even need the Stier's scope.
Christy! Do it now!
Titian-haired Christy Roth moved from hiding and made for the tree along the uneven rock face where she had taken up a position. She raised her .38 caliber Smith & Wesson Model 640 and aimed at a man closing in on Doc. Both shots went wide of their mark, but they came close enough to send the man diving for cover.
Down, Christy.
Christy dived at once, splaying flat on hands and knees. Still, she kept moving forward. Mildred was behind her, aiming the .38 caliber ZKR 551 target pistol toward Liberty's men. A shootist in the last ever Olympic Games, Mildred was hell on wheels with a pistol. Christy threw herself the last feet to her goal. The old gnarled oak tree that held the rope to spring the trap that Ryan had set up for the encounter. Christy rose, holding Ryan's ponga in her hand. The rope snaked around the oak tree, safely hidden from most casual inspections. She brought the blade back, but a man suddenly erupted from the ground before her.
Goddamn bitch!
His maniacal face was limned in blood, but there was no way to tell if it was his or someone else's. He raised a double-bitted axe that had been cut down to a hand weapon and looped around his wrist by a leather thong.
Gonna cut you little now. Cut you deeper later.
A little under 6 feet tall and graced by nature and hard living, with a strength that surprised most people, Christy met the man's attack head-on. She brought around the ponga, swinging the razor edge toward her attacker's hand. As the stumps near his knuckles spurted blood, Christy rammed her .38 into his face. The man dropped to the ground, and she turned back toward the rope coiled around the tree. Sheared of its moorings, the rope slithered through the tree branches. Christy took up cover behind the oak tree and sent a silent prayer to Gaia, the Earth Mother, to watch over her companions and keep all safe from harm. Heavy objects were falling through the trees overhead. Some of the gang members had been taking advantage of the confusion to start raiding the supplies spread out on the blanket. Christy barely made out the thick tree trunk that swept down toward them. Short loops of the steel cable from the redoubt jutted from the underside of the huge tree trunk. The loops folded out big enough to catch a man's arm, hand, or foot, and it was thin enough with the force coming up with it to slice right through skin, flesh, and bone as it passed. Then it was among them, over a ton of falling wood that Ryan had selected from farther up the hill. Christy then aimed her revolver at the surviving man. Ducking behind the tree, she broke open her weapon. Her fingers moved smoothly as she refilled the cylinder. After those rounds were fired, she had only four more in her shirt pocket. She shifted around the tree, finding a new position that offered a less constricted view of the clearing below. They were down to all or nothing. Ryan shoved himself to his feet as the tree trunk, suspended from steel cables, swung back in its trajectory. Doc then came up with a Lama. Standing beside a tree with the Steyr, Ryan picked his targets. He then drew the 6-hour P226 and rushed forward, gaining ground and assuming a new position that caught the gang unaware. Getting to one knee, he aimed at a man mid-stride. His combat senses caught some movement to his left. He pulled around. Liberty stood near a tree, levering another shell.
You're a dead man, One-Eye!
Ryan shoved the 6-hour forward, facing the Winchester's barrel as it swung toward him. There was no time to move, and he knew that Liberty had him dead in his sights. Incredibly, it was Liberty that dropped in an uncoordinated tangle of limbs. Ryan turned back to the clearing. Nothing moved.
Jack!
Out, Dan!
JB!
I think we got them all.
Ryan kept the 6-hour in front of him and moved slowly.
Cover me.
Give me plenty of room to shoot around.
The muzzle of Ryan's weapon tracked across the scattered dead men, looking for signs of life among the mangled bodies. He found only two men alive and on their knees.
Mister, we won't tell no one!
Ryan intended to take his group into Hazard, and he didn't mean to leave a chance of any vengeance coming up from behind them.
JB, I got somebody still alive in the wag.
I can put a few rounds into it.
You hear that? Is that what it's gonna take?
And don't kill me! Maybe I can help you.
Looking around at things, I don't get the feeling we're in a spot to need a lot of help.
Well, are you planning on going into Hazard?
Ryan crouched and looked under the overturned wag. The dwarf, Albert, stared back at him, eyes wide and frightened.
And if we are?
Well, the folks in the Ville are gonna wonder what happened to Liberty and his bunch. They may not like it if you just come strolling into the Ville, but if I go with you, I can tell them Liberty said it was okay.
The way I hear it, the people of Hazard have been letting Liberty do their chilling for a while now. Could be there's not many in the Ville who'd care to stand up against us.
You want to take that chance when you could take me with you and be sure?
How do I know you and Liberty weren't related or something? Maybe you'll try to stick a knife in my guts as soon as you get the chance.
Me and Liberty related? Man, I got all the looks. He kept me around to torment me, mister. A few miles to the north, there was another Ville just setting up. I was part of that Ville. Some of us had a disagreement with the local baron, so we pulled up stakes and tried to make it on our own. Except we hadn't counted on Hazard being so territorial. 20 miles away we were, and the Ville elders decided we were still too close. They were afraid we were gonna overhunt the game in this area. They warned us to move away last year, but by then winter was coming on. We asked them to give us till the spring, you know, but instead they sent Liberty and his bunch of cold hearts to burn down our tents and the two permanent buildings we'd started before we talked to them. When they rode out of the Ville, not many people were left alive. I don't think the ones that escaped survived. Winter hit the next week, and the land around here can be bastard inhospitable during those times. 37 people, and all of them wiped out. No, sir, I don't have any love for the folk of that Ville.
Ryan stood, not presenting his back to the dwarf, in case Albert tried for a last-minute escape. He spotted Christy coming down from the hill.
I believe him, lover.
Might be an idea to have a guide in the Ville, at least until we get situated and figure out where we're going from here.
Personally, my dear Ryan, I think we could all enjoy a few hours' respite after our trip to North Carolina.
Yeah. Come on out of there.
After a brief hesitation, Albert came out from under the wag. He made certain to keep his hands in view, his stubby arms not allowing him to shove his fingertips up much past his head.
You won't regret this.
I don't have much in the way of regrets, and I aim to keep it that way.
Ryan scanned the corpses.
Okay, let's see what we can salvage.
On Ryan's orders, JB and Jack had set up security along the perimeter. When it came to scavenging, Albert proved invaluable. The little man had ridden with the gang long enough that he knew the hiding places most of the dead men had in their clothing. Albert paused beside a fat man with half his face missing.
This is Gustafson. I know for a fact he keeps a pouch with gold teeth shoved up his ass. He steals them from corpses they found in areas around Hazard. Liberty was always one to poke and prod in new areas, and they found a few places back up in some caves that nobody's been to before.
How do you know about the pouch?
Albert ran his hands along the dead man he was searching, his nimble fingers plucking away loose cartridges, as well as an oilskin containing tobacco leaves.
I was with Liberty's group a couple of months back when they found a new pocket in the mountains they were searching. Quakes run through this area pretty regularly, and they shove up new stuff to the surface all the time. He took a couple of teeth from a dead woman in that building. Knocked him out with a rock because he was in a hurry. Stuck him in that pouch he's so proud of. What he didn't know was there was some residual radiation in that gold. By the time he found out, he had running sores in his asshole. He didn't get any slack from the rest of the group for being so stupid.
Hey, Dad?
Yeah, Dean?
Do you think Albert ought to cut those gold teeth out of that dead man's ass?
No.
The dwarf released the fat man. He pushed up, then walked to the next corpse. Dean opened the oilskin of tobacco.
Hey, Doc, I got some tobacco here!
He tossed the oilskin to Doc.
Ah, lad, you are a prince.
Dean then turned his attention back to the corpse of a man who had carried a nearly full box of 9mm shells. They would fit his father's pistol, JB's Uzi, and his own Browning high power. It wasn't enough, but it was a start. He kept searching. When the scavenging was finished, Ryan surveyed the gear they'd taken from the corpses. Spread out on the blanket Doc had used, it didn't look like much. But Ryan knew that they were in a lot better shape than they'd been in after returning to the Matrans unit under the hospital in North Carolina.
Yeah, I didn't get any shells for the M4000.
JB squatted next to Ryan with the shotgun across his knees. He was a wiry man, scarcely more than 5.5 feet tall. He kept his hair cut short and wore a battered fedora.
They didn't seem to favor shotguns.
Our bad luck.
JB removed his steel-rimmed glasses and wiped them clean on his shirt.
Hey, Albert.
Yeah?
Hazard got anything in the way of an armory?
They got Tinker Phillips and his boys.
What kind of hardware do they deal in?
He kept Liberty and his group supplied. Tinker's pretty good with most weapons. He's got a shop hooked up next to the blacksmith's. His brother runs that, but they share the forge. Out here in this country, a man needs a blaster and a horse.
We can go back to the redoubt lever. Maybe make another jump and take our chances there. Or we can avoid Hazard altogether and live off the land.
With either of those choices, we need to be better equipped than we are now to handle ourselves. The Ville's the only sure way to get the things we need to restock. We're almost flat out of self-heats and ring pulls. And if we can't eat and drink when we need to travel light and quiet for a while, we're in trouble.
I know.
Ville's the best bet.
Jack sifted through the assortment of knives the gang had carried. Ryan knew from experience that Jack was interested only in the blades he could break apart and use to make more of the leaf-bladed throwing knives he'd lost in North Carolina. There wasn't always time to recover them during the heat of battle. Ryan pushed himself to his feet as a dark shadow skated across the ground in front of him. Another crow sat with the ones patiently waiting in the trees above. Ryan checked the sun. After the jump into Kentucky, he'd adjusted his chron according to Darkfall the first night, but he didn't know how accurate the time was.
Let's finish it. Get something to eat and get on the road. Albert?
Yeah?
The way I got it figured, the Ville's about a couple hours away on foot.
Maybe a little less if you really stretch your legs.
How do they feel about people coming into the Ville at night?
Well, as long as you're with me, I reckon you'll be fine.
That's what we'll do.
Ryan took a portion of the gear they'd salvaged and hid it away in his clothing. He filled his extra magazines with the 9mm ammo they'd found, as had Dean and the armorer. The .38 special ammo used in Christie's and Mildred's weapons had proved plentiful, and JB had been the first to point out that the cartridges had been reloads. Even before Albert had told them about the gun shop in the Ville, they'd had an idea. There hadn't been too many .357 cartridges for Jack's gun, but the cylinder easily accepted the .38 cartridges. They just packed less bite for the change. The companions left the dead where they lay and started up the hill. Crows dropped on the bodies before the companions even made it out of the clearing. JB gazed at the broken branches left by the tree trunk they'd hidden for their trap.
Sure made a hell of a mess in these trees.
Main thing is, it worked.
At the foot of the hill, scattered around the huge tree trunk that had killed a number of the enemy, the bodies resembled dolls until the crows climbed on them and began their work. Doc had shouldered his pack and easily matched the stride set by the others. He'd filled his pipe with a wondrous blend of tobacco that Dean had found, and his head was wreathed with smoke. Jack and Dean ran point up ahead as they followed along the faint trail that wound through the hilly country back to Hazard. JB covered the back with Mildred to keep him company. Ahead, Ryan walked with Christy.
You enjoy that pipe?
Doc looked down at the dwarf. Ryan had given the little man a pair of snub-nosed 38s that had been reclaimed from the gang. Albert had displayed a flair for working with leather and had arranged a pair of holsters for himself to carry the weapons. Even though they were short-barreled, the pistol still ran down his thighs nearly to his knees.
Yes, yes I do. Tobacco. Divine, rare, super excellent tobacco, which goes far beyond all the panaceas, potable gold, and philosopher's stones. A sovereign remedy to all diseases.
And that's quoted from something?
A work by Robert Burton, unless I misremember.
If you'll pardon me saying so, you seem very well educated to be traveling with your current company.
Well, I guess that depends on one's line of thinking. Myself, I consider to be almost vastly undereducated when it comes to the art of survival. But that man up there that I consider to be a friend is a true artiste. Until today, you evidently thought no one could destroy the men you traveled with.
That was not by choice.
And my statement was not an accusation.
His name is Ryan.
Yes.
Does he have a last name?
Cawdor.
That's Ryan Cawdor? The one whose father was a baron in the Shens? The Ryan Cawdor who rode with the traitor on Warwag One?
Yes, I see you have heard of him.
In this part of Deathlands, who hasn't? I thought somehow he would be bigger.
Any man would be hard-pressed to fill that man's boots.
If you have time in Hazard, I'd like to stand you to a drink at Cobb's. He's got a line of homemade wines that are among the best I've ever had the chance to sample.
Well, my small friend, an opportunity to lose one's melancholy in a bit of the grape is always a fine thing.
Well, Cobb's doesn't just serve liquor. Well, there's books there, dozens of them. I'd like to hear what you have to say about them, and I know Cobb would, too.
I shall look forward to that. I have a suggestion to make, if I might.
What?
Mayhap I could give you a few moments of respite by offering you my back for a time, in return for the consideration you'll be showing me.
The dwarf looked away, mopping at his sweating forehead with a handkerchief.
I don't like feeling I owe anyone.
Nonsense. You are going to be showing me an establishment that I might not find on my own.
Cobbs can be hard to find if you don't know what you're looking for.
Then I take it we have a deal?
Doc stopped and thrust out his hand. Hesitantly, the little man put his hand out as well. Doc knelt in front of him and let him climb on. With his short arms, Albert had difficulty holding on. Doc shoved him up onto his shoulders, and Albert sat there like a child. The comparison cut Doc through to the quick. A memory, blunt as a ghost in a Shakespearean play and as cutting as ridicule in Louis XIV's courts, drifted into his mind. He had carried another small person like this in the past. A name filtered through to his mind.
Rachel.
He saw the little girl in his mind as well. In that moment, Doc's heart turned to lead, weighing him down.
Dr. Tanner?
I am all right, my diminutive companion. But please, honor me and entertain me with a discourse you have read, heard about, or imagined. Something that would keep my mind occupied as I walk this winding path. And please, call me Doc.
A learned discourse, eh? Do you know Percy Shelley and Lord Byron?
The authors of Prometheus Unbound and Childe Harold's Pilgrimage, to name but a couple of their major works. By the three Kennedys, I would be remiss not having read their works. Even more so, not having heard of them.
Those are the two.
Doc felt better all